Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This week on Retronauts, a movie about plumbers that circles the drain. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Retronauts. I'm your host for this one, Bob Mackey, and today we're talking all about the 2023 movie, the Super Mario Brothers movie, the first feature-length adaptation of the Mario series in 30 years. So consider this a review cast that will either end when we're out of opinions or when we scream ourselves hoarse, whatever happens first. Let's see what happens. Before I go any further, who is here with me today in the same room?
It's Henry Gilbert, and I'm slowly learning that life is okay.
Mm-hmm. And who is our other American guest?
Wahoo, it's a me, Jess O'Brien, a.k.a. Voidburger.
And who is our foreign correspondent?
Hello, I'm Stuart Jip, and I say, trust the fungus.
Yes, a better catchphrase, not said in this movie. So I want to say up front, if you're listening to this, that there will be spoilers in this review cast. You've been warned right now they're going to start. Although there's not a lot to spoil because nothing really happens in this movie. And I think we all the people on this podcast are all on the same page when it comes to our opinions on this movie. So I will tell everybody out there listening, if you like this movie, it's totally okay if you like a movie. I will quote We Hate Movies by saying, it's okay to like a movie. And if you like it and we didn't, we're not saying you're stupid for liking it. We're just saying we didn't like it and we wish you no specific harm. So that's what I'm going
to
say.
Can I interject and say that actually I don't agree to that and I'd like to withdraw from that promise. I do think you're stupid if you like the movie. Cheers.
I can amend that. I can amend that, Stuart. Right, Stuart, stop. I can amend that. We don't think you're stupid if you like the movie if you're a patron. And you our you know, sympathy and trust and respect and everything like that. It only costs $5 a month, so, you know, consider how much is that worth to you? My respect. I think it's worth $5 a month.
That's a deal for a huge exemption.
I'm gonna say that I don't think you're stupid, but, you know, you don't know what I'm thinking. You don't.
Who could guess what Stuart's thinking?
That's why he's such a great host. So what I want to begin this podcast by doing is having an opening summation, because this is going to be a somewhat freeform podcast. We all just recently saw the movie, and I want each of us to talk about our thoughts about the movie up front in a minute or less, just so the audience knows where we're coming from, and then we'll break down our different points about the movie. So let's start with Jess. Jess, in a minute or less, what's your summation of the Mario movie?
Should I time myself? Do you mean plot-wise or vibes-wise?
Plot and vibes, just in general, just like a minute long, just like, here's what I think of the movie, and then we'll break all that down afterwards.
So,
and you won't be timed.
The 1993 Super Mario Brothers movie has a reputation for being disliked, and I think it is unearned, because this movie basically takes a lot of, like, the good things this movie does is it takes some of the some similar plot beats to the original movie and does them bad. But they're there. But basically, your Brooklyn plumbers that you know and love, they get zoiped to the Mushroom Kingdom. Toad pops up. Well, the first they get separated, actually. And Luigi gets yeeted to the Bowser zone or whatever. They are split up. Toad happens, and Toad keeps happening to you in this movie. Toad's whole role is to drag you kicking and screaming as fast as possible to the next scene. He drags Mario to the princess for no real reason. They team up for no real reason, even though the princess is hyper competent to a weird degree that is uncanny. It's like they swung so hard in the opposite direction of sexism that it became sexist again, and it's so strange, and I'd love to get into that again later. But
I definitely want to.
They go visit Donkey Kong Land. They fight Seth Rogen Donkey Kong. They get an army of Kongs. They shoehorn in a Mario Kart sequence. All throughout this time, there's some random licensed songs happening that are completely out of place and super whacked out. Then they get separated. They have the usual Act 2 low point where everybody's a little despondent. And then they decide, actually, we're fine. Let's do the thing anyway. They get some power-ups. And then, like, the Peach agrees to marry Bowser because it was a hostage situation. And then during the wedding, she... just solos his entire army by becoming Elsa from Frozen, and Luigi gets rescued. The end.
The end.
What a rollicking roller coaster of fun.
Yeah. Yes.
5 stars. Stuart, you obviously love this movie and can't wait to talk about it. In a minute or less, you're just opening thoughts about this movie.
Okay, I thought it was shit. And I mean that in the purest possible sense on every level. I thought even going in with the understanding that it's not aimed at me, it's aimed at children. But ostensibly, it's meant to be a family film. There are children's family films made by the same studio, like Minions, which everyone hates, but it has actual jokes in it. There are attempts to make you laugh in that movie. The Mario Brothers movie seemed to have no jokes. It seemed to have no story, and it just didn't have anything at all enjoyable about it for me. If you're there to look at things like and go, oh, it's that thing I recognize. It didn't even have that much of that. They showed it all before the movie even came out. You know, they're like, hey, it might have been an interesting, fun surprise to find out that Donkey Kong and Cranky Kong and all the other crappy Kongs are in it. But, you know, the DK rap even got revealed before it came. That would have been funny. I would have laughed at that if they'd have done that. But no, there was nothing. It was just a depressing movie that felt like it went on forever. And and what was the deal with that Luma? Why did they think that was funny?
This was
the go home joke?
This movie has the weirdest sense of non humor. Like there are attempts at jokes in this, but it's like someone was described what a joke sounds like to, and then they had to try to make a joke from that alien description of what humans like as jokes. Like it was so like displaced and strange. And yeah, that Luma was bizarre.
So basically,
funny.
I got very scattered thoughts, which we'll get into presumably. But I did about 6 things that I thought were not just bad, but like weird bad. Like, why did this happen bad? Which we'll get into.
Stuart's about a 4.5 on Letterboxd, I take it. Henry, your thoughts in a minute or less.
All right, look, I am the biggest Mario fan here.
I don't know about that, Henry.
I look at all my toys.
Just because you bought the most things.
I have
that's
the most
not how
toys.
It works.
Fine. All right, fine. Well, I own the most Mario merchandise.
Okay, there you go.
And there were parts of the movie like the fan service actually did work on me. And I think visually, I like the design of it. I just think it could have been way, way worse on visual design wise. Like, I like how colorful it is and how good it looks, but everything else about it, I agree with all you guys. Like, it is a 2008 kids movie made in 2023. Like, it is so kids movies. Like, even Illumination is better than this. Sometimes Sing is pretty much at the same level of just like obviousness and stupidness. And it was just like,
at least
you know,
there's
the
an
second
excuse
you saw
for the music being there and Sing. That's the whole point. But yeah, sorry.
Yes, yeah. But no, I mean, the cast is every obvious thing you do. Like, it's and yeah. Also, it is shocking that it is follows so many of the same story beats as the 1993 Mario Brothers film, because I think that shows you like, oh, Hollywood didn't come up with a new idea for a Mario movie, or at the very least, Nintendo did not approve of a new idea for a Mario movie. So it still has to be basically strangers in a strange land and the origin type story. It's just they did it with the characters looking more like how they look in a video game. But 5 to 10% distinct enough that if you sell the toys of them, you're selling the Illumination version toys, and Illumination and Universal get a cut,
so
as opposed to
that's
a Mario
like slightly more realistic denim. And also Mario's got weird like a lip now. It's weird. I don't like it.
And shoes and
weirdly detailed pupils.
I think
there
like
too.
The plot of this movie, it feels like they took like they tried to write this movie 8 different times with 8 different kinds of plots. You've got like the family daddy issues one.
Oh,
you've got
Christ,
the origin story. You've got the fish out of water, stranger in a strange land thing. You've got the brother relationship situation. All of those scripts got rejected. they shredded them all up, they put them into ChatGPT and said, make these generic plots about the Mario Brothers.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because in a lot of ways it feels like AI wrote this movie.
Yes, it does.
It does, actually.
Yes,
does. Yeah.
But Henry, are your thoughts concluded?
Well, and generally I will say there were moments where I actually did like go like, oh, this is fun. I like this. And then
when Donkey Kong says, this is fun.
Then Donkey Kong will say, well, no, then Donkey Kong will say something like, you seriously thought that would work?
What? Can we and not?
Donkey Kong had the one line delivery I thought was a bit funny, which is when Mario says, oh, like, he's like, oh, my dad thinks I'm something. He's like, oh, yeah, my dad does too. And he just goes like, your dad was right. That's like the funniest line in the movie, and it's not even funny.
But it's like every obvious thing I thought would happen happened, and then also some things I thought this is too obvious they wouldn't do it, and then they did it.
Yeah.
And, but like they literally said, like it's on like Donkey Kong. Like no. You need one extra joke to that. You can even say it's on like me.
Like me. Or like the joke was right there.
they didn't trust the audience.
Donkey Kong, which is me. Hello, I am Donkey Kong. And I am
they don't trust the audience is really interesting, because they'll go into extreme detail about how power-ups work as a concept, like a whole video game concept, something that like, unless you're Amish or 900 years old, you probably know that if you get a power-up in a game, you lose it when you get hurt. They explicitly explain this video game mechanic. However, later during Mario Kart, this Koopa with a blue shell just decides, blue shell, he just says out loud, and becomes the winged blue shell. And there's no explanation for that. So if you don't know that specific thing from Mario Kart, you're out of luck. But good thing we described exactly how power-ups and mushrooms work earlier in the thing. What is this?
Yeah, in Mario Kart, the blue shell attack is not a turtle killing itself.
Yeah. I still liked it better than the Sonic movie. That's okay. My last thought.
Really?
Better than the Sonic movie.
I'm not even that.
We'll talk about it. This is the opening summation. I will give my thoughts now, and then we'll get into all of our screaming. So my opening thoughts are... A good children/family movie should start with a strong script. This one does not. Things just sort of happen, and it feels like the filmmakers going down a checklist of the Mario elements they were either obligated or allowed to include. And I know a lot of people are pushing back against the critical negativity, and they're saying, it's a Mario movie. What do you expect? It's just a Mario. Just have fun. I say that the Lego movie proves that you can take what should be a very cynical product and turn it into a surprisingly good film. And I'm not even that crazy about the Lego movie, but it did surprise me, and this movie did not. And I will say that all the references mean nothing to me. I don't need mass market media to validate my interest, because Mario games are mass market media. It's the most generic video game next to Pac-Man is a Mario game. And I love Mario games. And I also will point out that my job is to watch cartoon movies once a month. And a lot of them are made for children, but a lot of them have characters that go through arcs. Surprising moments, interesting storylines. Like, this does not have any of those. This does not have, like, your fundamental movie parts. And, yes, I agree with mostly everything that's being said in these other opening summations. This movie was very frustrating. And in our last Mario podcast, I said, I'm sure it'll be surprisingly good, but actually I was going in expecting that, and I was let down.
Yeah, I was not going in this cynically. I wanted to like it, and like my bar was still like a little bit low because, you know, video game movies. But it's like the trailers look good enough, and usually, for me at least, the trailers are like misrepresentative of most modern movies to me, and they make it look worse sometimes for me. And I was like, well, if going by the trailers, which are pretty good, this is probably going to be fine. And I was like... shocked that it was this bad.
I went in like, I wouldn't call it cynical on my part, but more I really thought it was gonna suck. And
that's
it,
cynical,
and
isn't it?
Well, the thing is, I was actually surprised just how much it sucked. I really didn't think it would suck that badly. I just thought it would be real. I thought it would be bad, but it was horrible. Like, I never want to watch it again. Horrible.
I could sit through
Despicable Me 2 again, maybe.
If I didn't have this podcast to be on, I would have walked out of the theater like within the first like 10 minutes. I want to leave.
I wouldn't even have gone to see it if not for this podcast. So thanks for that, Bob. Thanks a lot.
I was going to see it.
Thank you for your service, both of you. Thank you for your service. So we're not just shouting random thoughts. I do want to sort of break it down into like different areas. And I do want to talk about the story first because I found it very lacking. If they can make two Angry Birds movies, movies about games with no lore, movies about games that are just like physics toys, I'm surprised they couldn't find a story here with all of the Mario elements swarming around, because it's a weird kind of Chosen One story, except Mario offers no real skills to the Mushroom Kingdom people outside of not being small and cute. And I think it would have been a much better choice if, like, oh, like, his plumbing skills amaze them, and it actually figures into how he defeats Bowser in the end, but they completely forget about that entirely.
Which happens in the 93 movie, by the way.
Yes, exactly. He uses his plumbing to save the day.
I was going
to
say, I'm going to just straight up say it. The 93 movie is good. It's a good watch.
It's good.
It's fun.
Yeah.
I like it. Especially the Morton Jankel cut. Look it up. Mm-hmm.
That's a better cut.
An interesting novelty, but in terms of story, like, nobody's going through an arc. The princess, we'll talk about her. I had similar problems with her, Jess, and that she has no flaws. She's ultra competent. She doesn't need Mario for any reason. She can touch the power-ups too. Mario doesn't have to learn anything. There's no characters that are moving through arcs, like
I
said.
Well, there was
like,
a training montage for no reason.
Except to holding out for a hero.
Yeah, and it's just like, I find all of this stuff lacking. Like, these are the essential movie elements that are even in movies for very little kids. Like, there's no, like, setup and payoffs, really, in this movie at all. It's like when, not to jump to the end, but I will, it's like, oh, Mario and Luigi are teaming up. Well, they never had a problem teaming up before. This moment is meaningless to me.
Yeah, but they repeat the line. Yeah. They say that as long as we're together, we can do anything. And that's supposed to be, like, the arc, them saying that twice. Usually there has to be something that happens in between those two statements that makes it change the meaning in some way.
A super easy script fix, like a line that could have fixed that, is like right before they get sucked into the alternate dimension, they get separated, have them have a small argument. That's it. And then Luigi gets yeeted, gets kidnapped, and then it's like, I gotta save him. The last thing I said to him was something really mean. And then when they reunite, it's like, I'm so sorry. Oh,
The business isn't working because you suck.
Yeah,
no, like,
that
you suck.
Yeah, that would have been it. That's all you needed.
It was there.
You know what?
Isn't it crazy that it follows the exact spine of, like, the movie? Like, it's two Brooklyn plumbers who have their failing business in a van that, like, the princess is Daisy in the 93, and it's Peach here, but it's an orphan princess who seemingly is from the real world.
And that part's not important at all in this movie.
No, yeah. I feel
they found a baby and made her their queen. Not weird at all.
When she looks up at the sky and says there's a lot of galaxies, I was like, is this supposed to be, like, a wink towards, like, a Mario Galaxy
sequel? That's what it was.
Sequel baiting us so bad in the middle of the fucking movie.
But anyway, and then everything follows, like, and then it ends with a giant fight back in Brooklyn. Like, they honestly should destroy the new World Trade Center in it to make it match entirely.
That would have made it funny. No offense to New York listeners, but I would have laughed if they did a Mario second 9/11.
But I just wonder, is that what Hollywood thinks? Like, well, this is the only way you can do a Mario movie. It has to be. I mean, Sonic also had to start with, like, Sonic comes from the video game world and he's in our world kind of bullshit too. But in, like, how did it end up the same? Is this what Miyamoto wants?
It's an isekai, isn't it?
We've already groaned about that in our last podcast.
Well, that's the same anime movie we watched too. It also is Mario's in the real world and sucked into
Did anyone think the first scene in which Bowser starts professing that the reason he's doing this is because he's in love with Peach and wants to marry her, there was a little tiny spark of Mario RPG style, Mario and Luigi style Bowser in there, you know, that the characterization he has there, and I was like, oh shit, it's actually going to be good because Bowser's actually going to be quite vulnerable and funny like he is in those games. But then no, they just fucking don't bother doing that. They
it's
just have Jack Black do a crappy song.
Isn't like the way that is good in Paper Mario and stuff like
that.
Vibe of pathetic. Yeah,
it's the brief flicker when I thought for a second, ooh. That's a good idea. Yeah. They're going to do Mario RPG style stuff, but then no, they just did Jables doing his joke. You know, his only joke.
We were talking about the similarities between the two movies, the 93 one and this one, and it wasn't explicable to me that they moved the final battle into the real world, because I thought the movie was going to end with my, like, my rewrite in my head was, okay, the Bullet Bill blows up the pipe to the real world and they're stuck in the Mushroom Kingdom, but here they're heroes and their lives are better. But the movie remembered, all right, there was 5 seconds of dad things we need to address, so the dad needs to look out the window and see his son saving the day. So I think that's the only reason why it was moved back. And then it's like, oh, they can just go back and forth whenever they want. There's no conflict at all.
Yeah. I thought, similar to the 93 movie, it was going to be like, oh, the worlds are merging, Brooklyn, my home. I thought it was going to be like, oh, I can take over this place too. Dope. And, like, they don't do that. Everyone goes back home. I assume that when Bowser's big-ass castle appeared, it probably crushed about 500 Brooklynites that lived there.
Thousands of people died.
A bunch of people just died, right?
Mayor Pauline is
going
to become a hero. She's going to host SNL.
Mm-hmm.
All of her scandals will be forgotten about for, let's say, 20 years, right?
I thought it was kind of funny that they went from a, like, sky castle bullet rain wedding climax to we're just in Brooklyn now and that's the end, bye,
punching each other.
Yeah,
well,
you get to see a sight I've always wanted to see and isn't unpleasant to witness at all, which is a weeping in pain, battered and bruised, realistically bloodied Mario. I don't want to see that. Why would any human being on the planet want to see that? It's like that picture that they did the rounds a few years ago. That's like, what if Mario was real? He'd look like this. It's exactly like that, except for the whole movie. Like, hey, do you want to see Mario's? Do you want to see Mario's paws? Like these paws on his face. Do you want to see Donkey Kong getting his skin realistically scratched by Cat Mario's claws? Is that what you want, kids? Weird movie, man. Weird movie.
I thought the ending. Yeah, I also thought the ending. When they blew up the pipe, I was like, oh, so they're stuck here. And then they're like, well, you're the heroes of the Mushroom Kingdom. You can't go back home. But, hey, you can be the heroes here and get used to this new world. That, like, is a sacrifice they have to make, you know. Well, it's also funny because, spoilers for Ant-Man Quantumania, if anybody gives a shit.
No.
I thought the end of that movie would have the same thing. Like, Ant-Man... A portal is closing and Ant-Man stays behind to defeat the villain. And I was like, well, he's stuck here forever, but that's the end of Ant-Man. But he sacrificed. What a heroic sacrifice. They instantly then reopen the portal and he's taken home and it's a happy ending and everything's fine. And I was like, why? What? You had much more like pathos in this ending.
I was almost invested. That was a close one.
I felt dumber in Ant-Man, where I was like, oh, you actually made me think you'd get to do, like, an interesting ending
When there are actual, like, stakes that matter and when things happen that change the characters, like, I know it doesn't compare that well, but let's say Spider-Man No Way Home when Aunt May gets iced. That actually makes it a much better film because it creates an actual sense of, like, tension and, you know, stakes and consequences are actually real. And then I don't really expect the Mario movie to have Luigi get, like, bled out or anything. I don't expect that. But nothing happens at any point that's, like, in any way makes you think, uh-oh, threat. A real threat is happening.
Yeah, I mean, Stuart, this is from the same, like, kind of corporate filmmaking that was in Star Wars where it's like, oh my god, Chewbacca's dead. Oh no, he was actually in the other plane.
That's the
sorry
worst
about that.
Shit I've ever seen, Bob. Yeah. I'm sorry. You always reminded me of that. Oh god.
Yeah, it's really bad. But I do want to go back to what Jess was saying about, like, how Luigi was mishandled. Like, the movie is called the Super Mario Brothers movie. It's about the brothers.
Mm-hmm.
They're always getting along. They're separated not by choice. So again, the moment at the end where it's like, we're better together. It's like, yes, you always knew that.
It wasn't your
fault that you were separate. And I feel like if your movie is going to be called the Super Mario Brothers movie, it should be about them. And 20 or 15 minutes into the movie, they're separated. Luigi doesn't get to do much. And then it becomes a Mario / Donkey Kong buddy comedy where they're at odds, but then they grow closer together. And I feel like that's one of the issues with this film is that there's so much just in the Super Mario Brothers world, but they're like, oh, but it's got to be a Donkey Kong Country movie, and it's got to be a Smash Brothers movie, and it's got to be a Mario Kart movie. And even with all of those things, they're only there to make montages happen. They don't make the story any better. So the movie feels overstuffed, but also very, very padded at the same time.
You know, something I noticed about the movie, and I've been told off on the internet again for mentioning this, did anyone else notice how much talk of death and killing there is in this movie? For a Mario movie. It's constant. It's like Bowser, I'm going to kill your brother right in front. Kill his brother right in front of him. I'm going to kill him. You're going to die. The sweet embrace of death. Like, constantly going back to just death and killing. We're going to die! And I'm like,
it's a weird vibe.
It's weird for a Mario movie, right? It's kind of weird. I mean, when I play Mario, I die all the time, but all he does is go like, and then come back.
And there's no one-ups in this movie, even though they're talking about death all the time.
See, that's funny. There wasn't a one-up joke in the movie. The constant
Scott
death
Pilgrim
thing was sort
it,
of done in the montage, because it's Mario keeps falling and then has to restart, but it's just like that's their closest thing to it. But no, I think the death stuff in it, I mean, that's like Hollywood writing 101 of like, you need stakes. You have to have characters say like, this is serious. You're going to die. I'm going to kill this guy. I'm going to torture him. Like, but I don't know. I think too with Bowser, I didn't know how they wanted to play him, because they, in the trailers, they didn't let you know that he was a jokey figure. He's only scary in the trailers.
Yeah.
And then the second he sat down at the piano, I was like, no, he really did just do the Jack Black thing. That's the exact reason you hired Jack.
Maybe I am just kind of being kind of a nerd here, but like, Bowser as a threat should, for me, be almost pantomime level. Like, I don't mind when he's appearing and he's threatening and he's breathing fire and stuff, but when he's saying stuff like, I'm going to kill his brother in front of him, I'm like, who is this guy? He wouldn't do that. He wants to, like, marry Peach or just, like, jump on Mario. You know, it's weird when he's just explicitly threatening death. I just find that weird.
I feel like everyone's characterization was off, though, like, in different ways.
Yeah. I also noticed all the talk of death and like all of the dark jokes with the little floating Luma
thing.
They
loved that. They loved that, didn't they?
It
would have
been funny
six times.
Yeah, it would have been funny if that was just like one line in the movie, but boy, they lingered on it. And a lot of this movie, I feel like it was focus tested a lot, where it's like, oh, this tested well, we're bringing that back. We saw that in the Simpsons movie with like Spider Pig, like, oh, audiences love Spider Pig, so we put the Spider Pig song in at the end, which is why I was like, oh, audience must have loved the Bowser doing the Peaches song, so that's why he does it again in the mid credits. And when I heard the Peaches song, I was like, oh, this is just like the Dana Carvey Chopping Broccoli song. It's like, it's the same comedic idea, basically.
It's like every other Tenacious D song as well. It's, you know.
That's like, I love the D.
Yeah, me too.
That style of comedy, like, do one more thing with it. Like, that, when I call it a 2008 movie, like, that's another of those feelings, because, like, the Tenacious D, some people saw him in the late 90s on the, like, the accompanying Mr. Show movie, or show stuff. Then they had their movie in, like, 04. And then their stuff started being in kid stuff. Well, also, there was School of Rock in 03. Like, literally a 20-year-old movie. And so now they put him in a kid's movie 20 years later, and it's like, just the same thing. Just do that. Why try something else?
I love Jack Black. I really wanted to enjoy him as Bowser. I really thought he might be fun, you know?
Yeah.
But he wasn't. Jim Carrey as Robotnik was fun.
he had a lot of fun in that movie. And yeah, I was as thinking like, at worst case scenario, Jack Black can at least deliver lines funny. So like, unless he's got really bad material, he's going to be fun.
Oh boy. It's like a jump cut. It's like, well, I'm sure as long as he's got good material, but swipe.
Speaking of that joke, they did that about it. They did the same like four jokes like 12 times each. Like the slow-mo, like Mamma Mia, and like the
It's three times in the movie.
It's like, this is an ungodly amount of times to do the same joke. And the like record scratch, like something climactic's about to happen. Oh, music cuts out. Just kidding. Something stupid happens instead. That was like six or seven times that same joke happened, and I felt like I was going insane.
The repetition of it, not just in jokes. Like, there are scenes where, you know, the traditional scene where a character walks into something and it looks, and he sees it and he's amazed and he's like, whoa, and then it pans around to reveal the incredible like sights that he's seeing. They did that like three times. He does it when he gets to the Mushroom Kingdom. He does it when he gets to the Congo Jungle or whatever it is. He does it when he gets to the cart room. And I'm like, you've done this shot. do a different shot. It's so weird to have that happen three times. I guess it's just because they're like, oh, people like this. You can put this in the trailer. People, you know, I don't get it. It just felt like AI made it, like you said. It really does feel like that.
It's a lot of that does feel like padding.
Thank you.
I do want to talk about the voice acting, though. My thoughts are, it's just like, it's so, like, the movie is like the most, to me, it's the most average movie ever made. You could calibrate other movies using this movie.
Yeah.
And I feel like, you know, Chris Pratt, I have no strong opinions about him. I don't really care about him that much. He was funny on Parks and Rec. That was a long time ago. But it's like, okay, you're competent, but also anyone could have done this. Anya Taylor-Joy, competent, but also the role she's given is somebody with zero personality or anything interesting to do or say. I think Seth Rogen is a fine Donkey Kong. And I really wanted to hear more of Charlie Day as Luigi.
Yeah.
But, like, I didn't even know that Keegan-Michael Key played Toad. I'm like, the whole movie, I'm trying to figure out, like, who is this? And, man, that could have been anybody.
Yeah.
And Jack Black, I'm not even that hot on him playing Bowser. I mean, yes, we all love Jack Black. He's very funny. He's very kind, etc. He's a gamer just like us. But
he's worn your wife's T-shirts.
Exactly. Wow. I respect him for that. But he is just doing Jack Black's shtick. And I think it's funny that, like, Chris Pratt is, like, if Jack Black went down the dark side, it's like, if there were Marvel movies for Jack Black in 2002, he would be in Chris Pratt shape and also not very funny anymore.
And I think a lot of these actors who I've seen them in other lots of animated things, and I think they have much more room to have fun. I feel like the fun is in the editing room floor. Like, I think that they wanted the safer stuff. I think especially, like, Toad is nothing in this movie. There's a couple times where Toad, like, does a joke of, like, oh, I'm really tough and we're gonna do it. It's like, well, you never show that side of you again. You're basically just silent most scenes. Or it's like, isn't it funny? He's in a big truck. It's a big truck, but he's little.
He's little.
Could you believe this little guy's in a big truck? Like, I was like,
I completely missed that was supposed to be a joke. I was just like, oh, yeah, okay.
What a funny juxtaposition.
Don't forget the other thing that Toad does, which is bellow about death constantly, just at the top of his voice. Like, this guy's brother is going to horribly die.
Oh, yeah, that screaming stuff. Yeah. Screaming's the same as a joke.
Well,
I mean,
like I said, like, his whole role is to just, like, drag us as an audience and Mario to the next scene as quickly as humanly fucking possible. Like, it's the pacing of this movie is batshit. I couldn't believe, like, how slow and how fast it was going simultaneously.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, it really is like you're watching it on fast forward or someone's just doing the crib notes. It's crazy how fast the pacing is in a bad way. Very bad.
Also, like, speaking of the voice acting, Kamek, Kevin Michael Richardson.
Oh, Christ. Sorry.
What's with the Peter Lorre impression? Can we, like, get over, like, the Peter Lorre impression in the year 2023?
Yes,
like,
why does
every lackey need to sound like Peter Lorre
Before he spoke, I was like, I wonder what voice he's going to do. It's probably going to be, like, Peter Lorre or something. And then, like, of course it is. Like, what else? I mean, that's the least creative thing you could do. So, of course, that's what they did.
And I don't even think they named the character within the movie. And he's just Bowser's second in command. I don't even think he ever says, Kamek, do this.
Kamek, the Magic Koopa.
Everybody is doing the obvious thing. And I know that these are creative people who know what the obvious thing is and would say, I got to think at least a few of them said, well, okay, that's the obvious thing, but we can do something else. And then somebody is directing them or then goes like, no, we need the obvious choice.
Some, like, studio person's like, the audience is not going to understand that you're subverting something. They're going to think you missed the obvious joke. They want the obvious joke. Let's be safe.
So with Pratt and Charlie Day, I did want to mention, like, their first scene in the movie. And I'd seen the trailers and I knew what their real voices were in the movie. But in the first scene for the commercial, the joke is, what if they did, like, the video game voice? And when I heard it, the joke is, like, to make sure it, you know, it's a joke, the characters literally say, are those voices a bit much? Are you sure? But when I heard him in the commercial, I was like, maybe it's because I love the Mario voice, but I was like, yeah, that voice would work perfectly fine for me this entire movie. I don't give a shit.
I don't want to hear that for 90 minutes. I'm sorry. I do not want to hear that 90 minutes of, it's me. Oh,
so, like, the constant,
no thanks.
The constant lampshading of everything, though, like, everything needed to have a little look at the camera, like, isn't this dumb sort of thing about the world and the world building and stuff like that. Like, oh, I gotta eat mushrooms to power up, but I don't like mushrooms. Like,
oh yeah,
which, by the way, did not have a payoff. They should have had him eating a big old mushroom slice of pizza at the end, enjoying it. That did not pay off.
Yeah, very few payoffs in this movie.
Yeah. Weird.
But I do want to go back to what Henry was saying about the opening, where it's like they talk with their Italian accents and then they're like, can you believe those crazy accents? Mm. I'm the Mario fan in the audience and I'm like, no, I like that Mario and Luigi jumped off of a pizza box to entertain me. And it's like a weird like whiteification of the characters, because it's like, oh, Mario's relatives can be ethnic as hell because they're silly, but Mario talks like a regular white guy and so does Luigi. And right now I'm playing the Mario RPG remake for 3DS, the first one, Superstar Saga, and I like that Luigi's like, ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da! Like, they just speak in nonsense gibberish. I don't want a movie like that, but it's just like, I like how they are outdated caricatures, and it's okay to be racist against Italians.
It is,
right?
Though.
Yeah.
As an Italian,
saying that on Retro
House.
Thank you.
Give the Mario movie to Aardman Animation and let them do it like with no voicing. That would be good. Just noises.
I'm just worried that this movie is drawing the line in the sand where it's like, well, we can't go back now. So in Mario Odyssey 2, he's going to be like, let's a go. Mamma mia.
I didn't even, it wasn't like I was like, you know, going like, his voice sucks. Like his voice, I was one of the top people on Twitter going like, Chris fucking Pratt again when this was announced. Like but honestly, like his voice, I was not bothered by his voice. Keegan-Michael Key was my least favorite of the main voice cast in the whole thing. But like,
what about Cranky Kong?
I thought he did fun. You
oh,
know,
God,
and,
Cranky
look,
Kong. Oh, no.
I kind of like that Fred Armisen was playing like annoying Jewish father to Seth Rogen's character.
I thought he recorded that lying down somewhere. He was like so not
it was done
into this.
During COVID, probably
He was being driven to another better movie while recording that on his iPhone. I mean, I didn't need Cranky Kong in this movie, okay? I didn't need Donkey Kong. I don't really need him in this movie. That could be in a sequel. But Cranky Kong, he should have been like one of the Oh Hello guys. Like, he wasn't Jewish enough for me. He didn't sound old enough for me. He just sounded like a middle-aged Fred Armisen, just kind of like, dude, do the shtick, all right?
He should have upped it more, yeah. No, nobody made bold choices. You compare it to the Lego movie, which is also full of seriously style humor, but done much better. And they made much bolder choices with, like, you know, with Batman is Will Arnett doing, like, going hard. Like, he's going hard in the idea they have. Cranky Kong has that idea, but they want to go, like, 50% at best. They do not want to actually go hard into it because they lack the guts to actually try.
Yeah, this is a cowardly movie.
Yeah, Jess, you brought up Princess Peach. I have many thoughts on the conundrum of Princess Peach. Yeah. Which, well, okay. My main thought is that Princess Peach is the video game damsel in distress. If you make a video about or an essay about there's too many damsels in distress in video games, it's a terrible trope. She's the picture you put in it because that is what she represents. So I can see why if you're writing a movie starting in 2015 probably then your thought is, well, obviously Peach can't be captured, she can't be, though she is actually, though she gives herself up, I guess, but
yeah,
they, I feel like it's an overcorrection into making her entirely, almost entirely uninteresting.
I could see the pitch for this character. It's just like, this is the Peach for the 2020s. She doesn't get rescued. She rescues other people. Mm-hmm. She's badass and competent. She's a girl boss. Jess, what are your thoughts about this? And yes, I am saying they made Peach woke.
I know, right? Like, here's,
I'm not actually
like,
saying that.
Here's the thing. Like, like I said earlier, it is such a crazy overcorrection that it feels sexist again. This is like the feminist horseshoe theory, where on one end you've got crazy ass girl boss Peach that has zero flaws, does everything perfectly, needs absolutely, and nobody in this movie helps her hardly at all, because everything is fucking totally handled by her. You've got that end of the horseshoe, and on the other end you've got like Roll from the Mega Man cartoon, where it's like, she can kick ass, look, she was built to be a maid and she's got a hair dryer and a vacuum cleaner as weapons, like that's fucking really sexist. But if you go swing the other direction, it feels like you don't even know what women are as just like entities, human beings. Like, it's just a facade of some sort. It's just like a robot coded femme at this point.
I mean, I'm not, I know it's a different movie obviously, but I watched the Dungeons and Dragons movie today, the new one.
Great.
Yeah, it's great. And you know, there's a character, I've forgotten her name, Helga, I think, or Holger or something like that.
Helga, yeah.
And who plays her from Fast and Furious? The name escapes me. I'm very bad
Michelle
at this.
Rodriguez.
Michelle
That's
Rodriguez.
That's the one.
Yeah.
And she's hyper-competent, but she also has vulnerability.
Yes.
And, you know, there are moments when she cuts tension. She makes actual jokes and doesn't just constantly win all the time. But it really didn't seem like it would be that difficult to give Peach some kind of personality rather than just...
She has one in the 93 movie, and she gets damseled in that, too. But she gets her own damn self out because she stabs, like, the lady that's keeping her captive and leaves because Toad helps her. And, like, you know, she does some rescuing of herself in that. It's not as, like... you know, regressive as one might think for 93.
And she has a love story with Luigi instead of, like, nothing. Like, also with Peach in this movie, too, like, there's that line they have after the practice session where she's trying to support him, like, hey, it was hard for me, too. And then Mario's like, you did it perfect the first time, didn't you? And she's like... yeah. And I was like, yep, that's who you are. You did it perfect the first time.
I mean, I at least assumed in this movie, it's like, okay, I was expecting, like, movie things to happen in this movie. That was my mistake. And it's just like, well, yeah, Peach is probably, you know, she's got a lot of pride. You can tell that. So maybe that will be, like, a slight misstep will happen because of her pride. But no, she is doing everything correct at all possible times. And I think a better excuse, a better transformation of a character that had a better excuse to transform was, like, Bo Peep in Toy Story 4, where I feel like, they were overcorrecting a bit based on, you know, Bo Peep not even being in Toy Story 3 and her having just, like, to sit on a shelf for most of the other two movies. But they gave her a role that made sense in Toy Story 4, and they gave her, like, they made her more of a worldly character. There was a reason why she was more confident than Woody in the new place they were. And I felt like that is a good way to make a feminist character. It's not perfect, but it's much better than this.
I guess if you want to make a character like Peach who's completely flawless... the problem is that makes them not likable. It makes them kind of arrogant. So if you lean into that and you make them a little bit obnoxious and, like, prideful and, you know, boastful, that's even that is something to latch onto, to be just kind of like, oh, this is
people
that character's
really,
flaw.
People really hate Oscar. Turn her into Oscar.
Everybody does hate Oscar. They're wrong. Oscar. Also, I think with Peach, too, like, there was one moment in it where I thought, hey, I think this is, like, an interesting thing. Well, it's not exact. Well, it's a little bigger than one moment, but they do, when she first sees Mario, she's like, wait, are you human? Like, she's, there's a moment of, like, oh, she feels incredibly lonely and isolated in this world as the only person like her. And now that it makes a connection with Mario when she meets him, because she's like, oh, you're another human. Let's, you know, and when they're in the field later and she reveals her origin story, I was like, you could give a little more here. Like, at least show that she is lonely, or that she thinks, not only is she lonely that there's no other humans, but also she got turned into royalty by a bunch of weird little men who, and she should be like, yeah, they built a castle for me and a stained glass thing. It's kind of fucked up. And they all just revere me as their queen, like our princess.
Yeah. I'm thinking of all these choices they could have made where it's like, maybe she just has, like, a bunch of weird habits because she was raised by mushroom people and maybe they gross Mario out. Like something, or maybe she's just so pampered that she can do the obstacle course really good, but when she's out in the real world, she's not quite as confident. Like, there are setbacks there, but it's just a very bland, like, corporate feminist character, and I feel like it's only being done because it's a popular choice to do that. That's the only reason why they're doing that, and they're overcorrecting as well.
Can I talk real quick about a very quick scene that just peeved me so bad? It was, like, when they were Mario karting on Rainbow Road. Man, that was horseshoed in like crazy. But, like, Peach and Mario are talking on their different, you know, vehicles. And, like, Mario kind of accidentally says something a little, like, that's just a compliment, and it's not flirting. But, like, Donkey Kong, Seth Rogen comes up, is like, yeah, are you guys flirting? And, like, Mario's like, no, what? It's fine. I'm just being friendly. And then Toad comes up because Donkey Kong's like, you don't even have a chance with her. And then Toad comes up and is like, he could totally get with her. And, like, that could have been funny, but it's like, and all that Peach does is go, boys, boys, please, and, like, has no emotional reaction at all, is the most possibly neutral position she could have taken in that super weird scene that did not need to happen at all for any reason whatsoever. It was not even funny.
Yeah, I felt like it was it their way of saying that, no, Mario and Peach aren't a couple, or are they, or will they, won't they kind of thing? Like, it is it about, because then they share a little moment of looking at each other. There's, like, little glances, but also, like, I mean, just have romance or don't. Like,
you know, and just having a weird joke about flirting, which is at like the expense of Peach, but she doesn't even, she doesn't get offended. She doesn't like go, ah, ha, ha, tee, hee, like embarrassed. Like no emotional reaction is the weirdest possible way for her to be played in that scene.
And the wedding stuff, I was like, well, this looked better in Odyssey. Every time they did the wedding jokes.
I will feel like if there was a love story, then she would be a character and there would be an arc and growth. Like, she thinks Mario is kind of a loser, but he wins her over and there's a spark between them. But there's not even that. I feel like a lot of the limitations they had in this movie might have been brought down by Nintendo. Like, well, Mario and Peach aren't going to kiss in this movie. They're not going to get married. There's not going to be a love story. It's all about the chase for Mario. And maybe he and Peach are just friends. He gets a peck on the cheek every once in a while, but that's it. Like, I feel like a lot of, like I said up front, it feels like a lot of the movie was mandatory checklist stuff. And I wonder how much of that was brought down by Nintendo saying, make sure you do this, 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 and this. Do not do these things. And I feel like maybe they could have had more fun because according to Stewart, the Minions movies have like stories and actual jokes. And here it feels like their hands are really tied from doing anything too edgy or subversive or interesting.
I don't know what, I mean, I just don't know what this movie was. I'm going to be honest with you, even talking about the movie is just making me feel kind of sad. Like, it's just remembering this movie and the time I spent watching it. Like, I just remember the joke when they get to the castle and when Mary gets to the castle with Toad and the Toads are like, oh, the princess is in another castle. And I'm like, what? Like, no, don't do this to me. There's no need. But
they were checking the bot. They were checking off the checklist. These are the lines people expect to hear. So I will say, I do want to say one positive thing about it in here is that.
Well, I would advise you
how
not
dare
to.
You?
I saw this in a theater with a ton, like a big family theater. The kids did love it. The kids were actually like. And it was also weird because there's a dumb joke in it of where Bowser doesn't know what a spiny is. And like a kid. I was thinking it in my head of like, it's a spiny. Come on. We know what these are. But like literally like a little kid in my row said, spinies, spinies. Like,
you should have said, shut up. I'm trying to watch a goddamn movie.
You know what's weird about that joke is they don't even look that different to the Koopa Troopers. It's kind of, why don't they choose a weirder looking enemy, like one of the bizarre Mario enemies instead of a normal one? That would have been a funny
joke. Yeah, Stuart, I had the exact same opinion where it's like, well, spinies are like the fourth enemy you encounter in the game. Make it like one of the weird Hammer Brothers you only see once or something like that. Just like, again, they didn't trust the audience.
I can't believe there were no Pokies in this movie. I'm angry.
They didn't trust the fungus.
Yeah. Not enough Shy Guys, no Pokies.
Oh, is there also, a chain shop in it?
When the Shy Guys...
I think there was, at the wedding.
Yeah, you heard. You definitely heard a Bow Wow noise, but this is so nerdy, but the Shy Guys, when you first see them in the movie, they make Shy Guy noises, and then later they speak full like sentences, and it's just like pick a lane. But that's just a really, really minor thing to be annoyed by.
No, Stuart, that bothered me as well. They make the Shy Guy noises, and then Bowser is like, who is this guy? And it's like, well, Mr. Bowser, it's Luigi. Or they have some kind of weird voice. Like, well, they can talk now?
But at the risk of being excessively harsh, the reason for that is that nobody gave a shit. Like, this is just the most, fuck it, it's done, move on, movie ever. It's going to make $10 billion anyway. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And it's when I watched it, it's just making me, it's like insultingly bad. It made me sad.
Speaking of not giving a shit, I do want to talk about Illumination. One of their trademarks is all these needle drop songs, licensed songs in the movies. And there are so many in this movie. And my correct assumption was like this song didn't used to be here because nothing they're doing is matching anything in this song, and the song doesn't really fit.
And that turns out that was true, wasn't it? Sorry, sorry, I didn't mean to jump on your point there, to be honest. I apologize.
No, that is true. Yeah. And yeah, like, I feel like there were different versions of this movie being tested, and it's like, well, you see, sir, this the audiences in Phoenix, they love the A-ha song, and so did New York and Seattle. It's like, okay, well, take out whatever shitty instrumental song. I know it's good, but this is the executive song. Take out whatever shitty instrumental song that guy we hired wrote. Drop in A-ha. And the thing is, like, this movie is for people, like, kids and people in their 30s and 40s. Like, I feel like I'm too young to be into Take On Me. When I got into Take On Me, people were ironically nostalgic for it. So just like, that song feels too old, and so does I'm Holding Out for a Hero. Yeah. I like that song when it was in Short Circuit 2 when I was 6.
I'm just a big fan of synth pop in general, so I love to hear Take On Me no matter what, but I can listen to Take On Me at home.
The thing that immediately, like, the first moment where I thought, I'm not going to like this movie, was one of those needle drop moments, and it was at the very, 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 very start where Bowser's, you know, fighting in the ice field and all that stuff, and the penguins come out, and I know for a fact, because it was in one of the teaser trailers, that there was cool music in this scene at one point. Instead, in fucking stead, they replaced it with Battle Without Honor or Humanity from Kill Bill. And it's like, who is this for?
It's the most obvious shit ever as well.
What the hell?
A couple things with this, because I retweeted a person who pointed this out to me, like, that use of Battle Without Honor and Humanity from Kill Bill, like, that, after Kill Bill Volume 1 came out, it was used in, here's a list, and this is not a comprehensive list of all the things it's used in comedically: Transformers, Shrek the Third, Kung Fu Panda, Hotel for Dogs, Team America World Police, Hoodwinked 2, Hood versus Evil, Mitchells versus the Machines, The Boss Baby, Family Business. Like, that is how extremely played out that joke is. Well, to be like, oh, isn't it funny to hear this Kill Bill song over non-intimidating things?
I'd have enjoyed it if it went on to become an absolute bloodbath. That would have been funny, but I mean, obviously that wasn't going to happen.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, like a Newgrounds style, like 2002 fan animation.
And I want to credit the Twitter account K Rule Country. That's who I quote tweeted when I mentioned it. But like, so the soundtrack comes out, like the orchestral score soundtrack comes out, and there's tracks on it, and I think the orchestral score by Brian Tyler is really well done. And full of, like, these great, like, leitmotifs or moments from classic Mario and Donkey Kong music. But there's some tracks on there. There's this track called Driving Me Bananas.
Yeah.
And it sounds great. It has stuff from DK Island Swing and DKC theme. And that is it syncs up with the scene perfectly. Some people have shown it. That's what they cut out for Take On Me. And it shows, like, they made it that far. It feels like a 2 months ago decision to get rid of that song and replace it with Take On Me.
The version of Take On Me they use is like oddly edited and truncated down so that it starts at the most iconic part and it ends at the other, like the more indie part. But like, that's not how long the song is. So it has like these very strange little, I don't know, there's little edits in it or something. And I was just like, this is so, I'm unmoored by how weird this is.
The visuals, they don't even at all like go with the song choice either. I mean, Holding Out for a Hero is kind of a weird choice. But could I say that I didn't mind No Sleep Till Brooklyn over the 2D sequence? Saying I loved it. Okay, that's fair. I'm not saying I loved it, but at that point, I didn't know it was going to be like a recurring thing in the movie, so I didn't mind it there.
Yeah,
but then
something that ticked me off about the No Sleep Till Brooklyn part was that like it was showing Mario being super athletic and like running to the plumbing job they had to do, and he was like going through all the scaffolding. They were doing all these cute little like poetry. It rhymes. It's like the same as the game. Like he's platforming, but in Brooklyn, and it was super cute. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. This means we don't have to have a training montage later because it's already established that he knows how to jump and run and flip. And no, we're going to do that anyway. We're going to set it to another fucking song that I hate. So that's great. Why did you do it then?
Well, yeah. No Sleep Till Brooklyn, if that was the only one, I'd have forgiven it because it's like it at least is set in Brooklyn. Yeah. It is thematically fitting to the scene. And it's like, you know, the Beastie Boy. It actually feels like something you haven't heard in 800 movies.
Mm-hmm.
Take on me, I've heard in 800 movies. Mm-hmm. Like over 20 years ago, South Park made the joke of putting it in their Aspen episode because they're like, yeah, it's an 80s movie. So, of course, you're hearing Take on Me in it.
And, yeah, and actually, I tweeted about this the other day, but the movie Basketball, which came out 25 years ago, the real big fish ironic cover of Take on Me was on the soundtrack. It's just like 25 years ago, we were being ironic about that song.
And same with Holding Out for a Hero. Shrek 2 used that. Shrek 2 is very old. And they at least had it be diegetic in the movie and it's sung by a character. Like, it at least works so much better as an actual joke.
Isn't that over the scene with the giant gingerbread man storming the castle?
Yeah.
See, now that's a good scene. There should have been a giant gingerbread man in this movie, for sure. And a Shrek.
You know, it is funny how this movie is making other movies we thought were bad seem good.
Yeah.
So I saw this movie with my wife, and like as a goof, when we got home, we were just like on our phones or whatever. We put on the movie Turbo on Netflix. It's a 2013 movie. Ryan Reynolds is a snail who enters like Formula One racing, and it sounds stupid, but we put it on and I was like, oh my god, like this is what a movie is. There's characters, there's ups, there's downs, there's arcs, there's an act structure, things make sense, things are set up and then paid off. I was like, I have respect for Turbo now, and I never thought this movie would give me that.
What you're saying is the Mario movie has completely realigned your taste in films. Like, it's,
yes,
yeah. Thanks, Mario movie.
That's why it's important to see bad movies, I think.
Yeah,
it's just
that,
like, you can recalibrate, like, I forgot all the things I expect. They're here.
What sucks for me is that I last week saw the D&D movie, which, as earlier stated, actually rocks.
Yeah, it's awesome.
And it subverts a lot of the cliches that are now very, very, very common, largely because of Marvel movies constantly lampshading and quipping and all these little gimmicks and stuff like that. And it doesn't do those things, and it instead, like, plays it sincere, doesn't say, like, get a load of this guy, how dumb is this world? It's just in it, and it's invested in itself, and it's not going to make fun of itself over it. And I was like, my faith in humanity and films was reawakened. I was like, wow, films can be good. I forgot. And then I saw the fucking Mario Brothers movie, and all that goodwill just, like, sucked out of my soul.
You definitely saw them in the wrong order. I was lucky to see them in the right order. Yeah, for sure.
I also thought the D&D movie was very good, and it actually felt like a campaign somebody turned into a movie. Like, yeah, which had the really good feel to it. But okay, I want to compliment. I am the guy who liked it by comparison on this, though. I agree with everything everybody's saying. Like, I think when they actually had to animate like a good long action sequence, like Donkey Kong and Mario's long run, like in one shot, I thought that was skillfully done, and it looked, and the production values looked high. Like, it did not look like a cheap film. And also, I think that, like, I feel like it was a Nintendo thing that they didn't stray too far design style wise from the games. Like, when they get to the Mushroom Kingdom, it may as well just be a level from 3D World.
I was thinking this about what you mentioned. It ties in with what you mentioned, actually. I was playing Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze yesterday, and I was thinking about Donkey Kong's design, and I was thinking it's really funny that, like, 30 or 25 years ago, some British guy made this horrible render, and now Donkey Kong looks like this forever. Like, he's like the worst looking character. He looks hideous, and now in this,
like,
top drawer Illumination movie, he looks like that because of some British guy 30 years ago. So yeah, big ups.
Like we said on the Donkey Kong Country podcast, he is just a brown Battletoad. Yeah. So now Illumination must animate the brown Battletoad.
That, talk about also the movie just shouting you in the face, like, we would know it's Diddy Kong, guys. Do you really need Cranky to be like, Diddy, I'm talking to you? Like, but I guess he didn't say, and Trixie, tell him to be quiet. Like, he didn't say that.
I mean, I was expecting, like, to be slightly tickled by the references, but honestly, they didn't go deep enough for me. Like, it's like, okay, Foreman Spike, yawn, I don't care about this. Like, show me a Boshi, show me a Booster, show me something that... Yeah.
The only two, like, ones that actually got me, and I was like, oh, cute, nice, thank you for that, was Luigi's ringtone being the GameCube startup sound.
Oh, yeah, they play it twice in full in case you don't get it. Sorry.
Cute, though. Yeah. I'll take it. Yeah. Not everyone knows that. That's for me. Okay. And the other thing was, like, when Luigi was in the spooky zone, they played a little Le Motif from Luigi's Mansion. I was like, okay, thank you just a little from just my little like black soulless gamer heart.
I praise one of those little bits? Just the one thing in the movie I thought was vaguely creative. When King Bob-omb sits down, accidentally hits the turtle, and it starts bouncing back and forth on the pews in the church. That was a cute little gag, I thought. That was okay. Yeah. More like that, please.
I was expecting more jokes about like the logic of the video games, but the references, they didn't really do anything for me. It's like there's a Punch-Out pizzeria, and Mario gets like knocked into it at one point, and I'm like, okay, why is this Punch-Out theme? Like, make a joke about that. But it's like, this could have been the Excitebike pizzeria. This could have been Wario's Woods pizzeria. It didn't matter.
Yeah,
it just felt like
there was a Duck Hunt French restaurant in the background, and it was just
I saw that one.
If you're looking for, like, I feel like I was looking at the backgrounds more than the foregrounds because they were so so dense, so like compact, so busy, and so distracting.
This movie is going to make listicle writers a collective $1,000.
No, they're already up. Like,
everything you missed.
Yeah. I should have looked up one of those, but I spotted there are several others that made me go like, yeah, like, in that bit where it's the Luigi's Mansion thing, he also does say, "Mario, where are you?" which is the famous Atari commercial for old people.
right. Yeah.
Mario, where are you?
Just speaking of the Easter eggs again, I know it's not a D&D movie podcast, but I want to compare it favorably to that again, because there are references to D&D and D&D things in that movie, and they're thrown in organically. I don't know anything about D&D, and when I got out of that movie, my friend said, "Oh, that was cool that the Displacer Beast was in there." I was like, "What's the Displacer Beast?" It's like, "Oh, it's that panther thing that was like... can make clones of itself." And I was like, you know what? I just thought it was a cool monster, and it in no way jumped out at me like, this is a reference to a thing. It doesn't put you out of the movie. It's just, you're in the world and you're enjoying yourself in the world. Whereas in this, it's just like, oh, look, there's Disc Gun in the background from the Famicom Disk System.
It's like kind of weird that, like, okay, the Mushroom Kingdom, sure, put all the references in there, but why are there a ton of Nintendo references in Brooklyn, which is ostensibly the real world?
Mm-hmm. Well, Mario's playing Kid Icarus in it, which asks a lot of questions.
Is this like a period piece, or is Mario a disgusting retro gamer like me? Yeah, I don't want my hero to be like me at all.
I think he is, because Luigi has a modern cell phone, so I think he is.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, okay.
Also,
I actually
towers.
Did like
Mario does not remember 9/11.
It never happened in this world.
I did like that Foreman Spike was in it. I thought he was hot. I liked it. I'll just say that. But also there was a couple other cute ones I liked. Was Giuseppe, who is the first Charles Martinet character who just talks like Mario. He's playing what is all intents and purposes the Donkey Kong game, but it is a game called Jumpman, an arcade cabinet for Jumpman. I thought that was cute. And I also did think it was cute as they're going down the into the depths of the Brooklyn sewer system. There's a sign behind them that says level 1-2.
Goodness sake. I didn't even notice that. That's awful. Sorry.
And watch it again. You'll catch so many things like that.
Yeah, if you keep your eyes peeled, you just may see a few little nods to little Easter eggs, you know. The one I hated was the toads in the background with the NES cartridge going like, "He just got a blow into it." I hated that. It was like a sledgehammer.
I did like the Mario Kart bit when they're setting up their carts. I was like, oh, that is just like in Mario Kart 8. You just pick your wheel, your thing, or I guess 7, and it even goes back to it.
I did notice in this movie, and it felt like a corporate mandate from Nintendo, where they're mainly referencing the newer games, and I understand why. Those are the games that are on sale. But it's like, a lot of the power-ups that play into the action scenes are the newer power-ups. Like, it's not the Tanuki suit, he's in the Raccoon suit, which is from New Super Mario Brothers. I think so.
3D Land.
No,
is
Flying
the
Squirrel
first time,
is
I think.
In U. I think 2 is the one with the raccoon. Or 3D Land also brought
you
back.
Can get the raccoon you can suit. Get the Tanuki suit in Super Mario Bros. 3, but it's not really the same. That one is from Mario 3D Land.
Yeah, because the raccoon suit is not the Tanuki suit.
No. Right.
And then it's like the cat suit is from Mario 3D World, but it's just like, I want to see like everything featured. I want them to all play in. Like, there was a reference to the cape, and the cape is like one of the coolest things in Mario, but I feel like
it's a joke reference.
Yes, it's a joke. Yeah. But it does feel like, okay, yeah, reference Mario Kart 8, reference, you know, whatever's on sale on Switch, and reference Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze or whatever. I feel like they're just, this is because there's no new game to promote right now because the release got so screwed up. I don't know if it was ever planned to release alongside a game, but it feels like that is their way to move more product, is to just like, oh, put the newer stuff in.
Maybe
this.
When the Blu-ray comes out, they'll do a direct and shadow drop the new Mario or something. I don't know. Mm.
I feel like there's a Mario coming this year. I think we're getting something. But, you know, okay. Also with the lore stuff, it wasn't until I read your wife Nina's tweet about accurately predicting the post-credits that I tried to think what the post-credits would be myself. And right before the movie, I whispered to my husband, like, maybe it's a Yoshi thing. But then in the middle of the movie, during their walking montage, there's a bunch of Yoshi.
Big
so
herd.
I was like... so when there's a big herd of Yoshis, I really felt like, well, then they're not going to tease Yoshi at the end of this because I just saw a bunch of Yoshis.
Sorry, that's what happens because I peaced out as soon as the credits started because fuck that. I didn't care.
Yes.
So that's what happens. You get a Yoshi tease.
Yeah. Like on the way to the theater, my wife, guest of the show, Nina Matsumoto, she said, I bet the stinger is going to be like you see an egg and it starts cracking and then you hear Yoshi's voice and it's like coming next summer or whatever. And that's exactly what happened. There's no release date, but we saw Yoshi. Thank you. I agree. We saw Yoshi's in the movie. You can't tease something that we had already seen. Mm-hmm. And of course, in the teaser, he says Yoshi in the way that Yoshi talks in the video game. But when we see Yoshi in the next movie, he's going to be like Timothy Chalamet or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. He'll go like, Yoshi, clear his throat and then have his normal voice. Like,
what if I talk like that the whole movie? Yikes.
Yeah. Mario, let's go.
Here I stand by that I like this movie more than the Sonic the Hedgehog movie, I think it's full of terrible, same kind of bullshit.
Disagree.
People talking about like, you didn't make my coffee right. Like, oh boy, Vente coffee humor. That's really great. But at the end of the Sonic movie, when they called their shot of like the next movie will have Tails, they show you Tails and they commit to a Tails design. Having only the egg is their way of saying we have not officially decided with Nintendo what Yoshi is allowed to look like in the next movie. So we're not going to commit to a vision of him in this. We're just showing you the egg like that. That's another like cowardly move.
Cowardly.
I feel like.
I agree.
I just want to make it clear to the listeners that I thought the first Sonic movie was bad. Like, it is not a good movie, but I still thought it was... thought it was 10 times more entertaining than the Mario movie, honestly. It had actual efforts at humor in it. It had some kind of emotional core to it, kind of. It had normal movie things. So, yeah, I did like it better. Plus, Ben Schwartz is just a charming man.
It's sad that the bar is like, it had normal movie things.
It's a low bar. It's a low bar.
Yeah,
I wanted normal movie things for this, and I guess I'll make a compliment sandwich that's mostly like made of insult bread. But yes, I did like the action segments. They did feel like the put your 3D glasses on now segments, which is fine. Like, they were well done. No one was talking. It was well animated. The gags were fun. The action was interesting. And, you know, there was some inventive stuff in there. And the kids in the theater... that's where they lit up the most. They were most excited by that. But I was also thinking, like, oh, none of the kids in the theater were, like, capable of speech when Mario Odyssey came out. That's how long it's been since there's been a new Mario game. Not a re-release of a Wii U game, but a new game. And I'm like, I wonder what these kids are playing. I wonder what their world is like. Because I came into this world, and then when I was 3, Super Mario Brothers came out. And then it's like, well, he was with me my entire life. These kids were just dropped into a world with, like, 30 years of Mario. And I wonder, like, what their experience was and, like, what they recognized and what they play.
That is an interesting point, I think, because when I right near the beginning of the movie, when Mario first makes it into the Mushroom Kingdom, one of the first weird things he sees is one of those bow-legged kind of purple orange things that kind of goes round and round, you know what I mean? Like a slinky. They move kind of like a slinky, and it goes right over him, and he goes like, hi there, and then it goes again. And I was sort of thinking, like, that's weird. Why choose that creature of all things? Like, nobody cares about that creature. And then I remembered that I'm old, and my experience of Mario is completely different to pretty much a fully grown adult now his experience of Mario didn't have like Mario World, all that stuff didn't matter. Theirs is New Super Mario Brothers, and that's what that's from. So yeah, that makes sense, I think.
Well, I wondered with the kids in the audience. I said it earlier, but like I was like, wait, what is Mario to them? But I have to remind myself that even though I think all kids play Roblox or maybe Minecraft is incredibly retro to them, like. I have to remind myself, like, Mario Kart 8 did sell, like, 80 billion copies,
yeah,
and
yeah.
New Mario Brothers. Like, kids do play a lot of Mario. Like, they do... I do think it still is a thing kids love. I mean, also, the success of this movie, monetarily, it shows you that, yes, kids do like this and know who Mario is.
So it is doing well. I haven't watched any financials or anything.
Oh.
It's doing well.
Yeah, it's about to be, like, Frozen 2 for best opening weekend of an animated movie.
Oh,
so
wow.
It's doing very
well. I wonder
well.
If it's going
to show up at the end, so of course.
Yeah. It's so funny.
Yes, she becomes Elsa. You're totally right about that. But I could tell, like, what references were for adults, because I could hear like the dad behind me kind of like mumbling like, oh, Rainbow Road, like he like I could tell like, well, that's for a 40-year-old. But I feel like Rainbow Road should have been your climax in the movie, not to like jump back into dissecting the plot again, but that felt obligatory. But that should have been the end of the movie. Rainbow Road is traditionally the end of Mario Kart. It's like the victory lap, the difficult final challenge before, you know, you get your trophy and everything.
And
but just like
strikingly beautiful too, on top of
It was a good action. It was one of the best action scenes in the movie by far, I thought.
Based on the trailers, I thought it was the end of the movie. Also, this isn't a problem with every single movie, but especially kids' movies. Every trailer gave away everything.
Yep.
Like, there was two things in this movie that wasn't in the trailer.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about a problem with kids' movies, Henry, and that is dad stuff. I feel like the executive thing is just like, oh, emotionally detached fathers, they test really well with kids. Let's put that in here. And it feels like that was an element of an earlier script. Like, Mario's dad's always down on him. He's trying to impress him. But I swear to God, there is 20 seconds of that with Mario and 5 seconds with DK, and it feels like, does that have to be in every movie?
No,
some of us don't have dads, and it rules. Some of us actually like our dads, represent the other part of the demographic that doesn't have dads who despise them, you know?
It really is just, like, two lines for both the instigation and the resolution, isn't it? It's just... The dinner scene where he says one thing and Mario walks out, and then at the end where it's just like, oh, Mario, you are not a terrible piece of shit after all. It's like,
Dad. I like that his dad hugs Mario and Luigi is nearby being, like, proud, but it's like, what the fuck? Why you're not hugging your other son, Luigi?
You know, I just stood in the path of a huge pillar of flame holding only a manhole to protect myself. Like,
and
come
I'm
on, where's my hug?
Mario.
Well, and Well, also, it's funny, too, now I think about Chris Pratt was... Another recent animated film he was in was Onward, which also ends with like a dad hug at the end of it. Like they all end with this. But in the eel, when they're inside the eel, they do have
seconds.
A conversation reminding
seconds,
you of like, oh, my dad hates me. But like, but yes, no, every that's a good, another of his checklist things. You have to end a movie with a parent apologizing to you. Like, that's what movies
we've
are
we've moved
now.
On to moms now. The moms are apologizing now.
Well, this has been in production so long.
Yeah.
It's like, honestly, Turning Red got, like, pitched and sold and released in the time it took to make this movie.
It's such a 21st century kids movie thing that they just, Cranky Kong did exist. He was an existing character. He has a personality. But Mario never really had a dad, but they invented dad to be disappointed in him. That's the only reason why they give him a dad.
Sad.
I mean, I'm thinking about this now, and, like, a movie that I do love, Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, that must have been, like, 15 years ago now, and that has the exact same plot beat as this. My God.
Like
every Lord
earlier,
Miller thing does.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, much as
I like, 8 different generic scripts that were just chopped up and thrown into ChatGPT and make it Mario, please. Because, why does this father figure does not approve of you thing even coming from? Why do we need this in the Mario movie? It's bizarre.
Lego really movie is. Ends with it, too. Yeah. And also Into the Spider-Verse as well. Mm. Ends with a dad, a mustachioed father hugging. It's the checklist. Like, it just
I guess,
like,
I mean, it is checklist, but of course, in those movies, they do kind of do the work to make it matter in some way. They establish actual characters that you care about, like Miles Morales. You like Miles because he's so real from the beginning, right?
Well, and importantly, he shares scenes with his father in between the start and end of the movie. Like, they actually have moments together.
Yeah, I feel like it's even stronger.
Good point.
It's like, oh, dad is in a different line of business. And especially if, like, again, you know, setting up flaws for the characters, things they have to overcome. Not to make it some random element messed up their first plumbing job. Make it so, like, oh, Mario is confident, but he's not as skilled as he could be. Or there's, like, discord between the brothers that makes them mess up the plumbing job. Not like a dog was mad at them.
That was
like straight out of life, Secret Life of Pets.
Yeah, just call a cop.
Right.
Cops, all they do is shoot dogs. The cop would walk in and shoot the dog in the head. You can do your plumbing then.
Yeah.
That scene was so friggin' weird because it was so, like, the stakes were really high. That dog could have, like, killed them. Like, that was a normal large sized dog, and it's like I imagine a version of this scene where it was like a nasty little chihuahua, which is like cliche, but it works better, and the stakes aren't as scary as like this dog is like chomping like big teeth noises at Mario's fucking neck, and it's like that's a little scary. It's this dog going ape shit on them for something they did not do on purpose to this dog. It was so random and weird.
And I guess if we're talking about arcs, Luigi did have the arc of, it's not that him and his brother had issues. It's that Luigi is scared all the time, but he got the confidence to save Mario's life by blocking the fire with the manhole cover.
Oh, something that we haven't talked about yet. What is up with that weird flashback where Luigi's being bullied by... And it's baby Luigi, and he looks nothing like the other kid. The other kid's like from a completely different universe. And then
they just had to shoehorn in the babies.
Yeah.
That's the only reason.
It's
same
so
with the Princess
weird.
Peach backstory. Well, gotta shove in Princess Peach baby.
It's so bizarre.
Once the babies appear in the movie, you can sell a toy of them.
Exactly.
That's why. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And baby Logan Paul, nobody's gonna buy a toy of. It doesn't matter what he looks like.
You're talking about that Luigi thing, Henry. I think it was another like half measure by the movie where it's like he wasn't afraid enough. He just seemed like to lack a bit of confidence. And that's not like the fun scaredy pants Luigi in the Luigi's Mansion games. Mm-hmm. Like, Luigi had a right to be scared when he ended up in hell.
When a giant monster is torturing you and saying, I'm going to, like, break all the bones in your body. Like, what a pussy, man. Getting scared of that. Like, yeah. No, I wish he was more of a scaredy cat. I wish everybody was just more of something. Embellish characteristics more.
I would rather have seen him separated from Mario having a separate adventure by himself or meeting up, like coming together with Mario at the end. That might have been fun, but then you get a bit
that's
more.
That's a good joke in Paper Mario, actually.
But actually do it and then have Mario not believe him at the end, like in Paper Mario. Like in Paper Mario, that would have been funny, I think. But I don't know who I don't. I'm no screenwriter.
Payoff of getting the superstar, I like that action, and I did like the music. They actually didn't put in a stupid fucking needle drop song. They actually had good orchestration of the star theme from it, and I like that of them. I wish they were like you said, Bob, everything has to be like how it is in the new games. Their power up worked on them like in the new games. They didn't flash like in the original game, but then I was reminded, like, the anime movie ends with him getting the goddamn star and doing the tail swing.
Oh,
like
you're
the
right.
86 movie.
Yeah,
it had the exact same ending.
I think
I totally forgot about
the movie should have ended when they got the superstar. I think Mario and Luigi should have jumped on Bowser. I think he didn't jump on enough things in this movie. That's just my personal opinion.
It really only happened in their like running montage. But I also did kind of like a couple of the times it was another like slow-mo zoom in, make sure you get it jokes.
Oh,
but
God, yeah. So
when it was moving in real time, I liked when Mario got in poses and was like, oh, hey, that's the box cover. And he's another pose. That's cool. But they just had to like smash it into your face.
You know, I didn't even I didn't get that it was supposed to be a Smash Brothers thing when he was fighting DK. It did not occur to me in the slightest.
It didn't read to me like a Smash Brothers thing. And I thought they could have like. I came out of the movie being like, they should have done a Smash Brothers thing in that scene. Like, that's how I came out
of Mario's
it.
Punches and kick poses, like, those were those were like his action moves from his Smash.
To be fair, I think during most of that scene, I was tweeting about how miserable I was in the movie theater. So that might be on me.
Yeah, I mean, like, I feel like it was a Smash Brothers scene because it could have been like, you got to make it up all these ladders. My son's gonna be throwing barrels at you. That could have been like the challenge. It could have been that could have been an interesting choice.
That would have been funny.
But instead, it was like fight Donkey Kong in an arena with that has weapons in it. That does feel like Smash Brothers to me.
I guess, but again,
maybe it was too subtle.
When they spin this off into the Super Mario Brothers movie universe, inevitably, you know, I might give a Donkey Kong movie a moment of my time. I'd like to see what's going on with the old DK, you know, go on an adventure to get his banana horde back. That would be fun, you know, maybe.
I'm sure their rollout includes that. Yeah. Like, after the success of the Lego movie, and they're like, oh, and Batman's the breakout star, so before they did Lego Movie 2. Yeah, so I would think DK is probably, they're like, that's why DK and his lore is so heavily featured in this, because it's their first spinoff plan.
Pretty soon, we're going to see, like, a Kathleen Kennedy figure in front of a giant roadmap. It's just like, well, here's what's coming in 2039.
Oh, God. Yeah. The Sniffit Chronicles. 2039.
I guess it really depends on, like, how long the tail is on this, because, yeah, this first weekend, really great. If it does pass like $1 billion and is like a super duper successful movie, then yeah, I think it's all going to be fast tracked pretty darn quickly.
I mean, word of mouth surely can't be good. Surely. The reviews certainly aren't. But I know it doesn't necessarily
matter.
There's
some defensive people on the internet about it. Like,
yeah. There are people. Yeah. I mean, there are people who like Balan Wonderworld. I'm one of them. So don't listen to people on the internet.
Oh,
you know?
God.
Well, I know. It's a serious problem.
You let this guy on a video game podcast, Bob?
I don't think anyone, any of our listeners would take this personally, but a lot of people have attached their ego to this movie. There's a lot of like Rotten Tomatoes ballot box stuffing where it's like, this movie's got a 98% audience rating. I feel like there are a lot of people that I understand why. Like, I was indoctrinated from birth, basically, to enjoy Mario and his antics. So I can understand what the attachment is there. But there's so many other Mario things. This is just one little product from the Mario line. And it's okay if you don't like it. This does not ruin Mario. There will still be Mario games. And I can still enjoy Mario. Like, I went back to Mario and Luigi. I'm like, okay, I like this. This did not turn me off of Mario.
This got me starting up a third replay of 3D World to be like, yeah, this is pretty great.
It's a great game.
Mario. I love that shit.
I'm planning on watching the 93 movie later in the week with some friends I need to feel whole again.
I wish this movie, if they're doing all these obvious needle drops and like that aren't even intrinsic to a scene or a clever new use of a pop hit song, couldn't they have just put in Walk the Dinosaur?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Couldn't they have just done that? Like, that's also, it was extremely obvious in 1993.
And you'd be asking, where's the dinosaur?
Yeah, Yoshi. Miyamoto probably would have said, like, he is not a dinosaur. He is a Koopa, and they don't use that dinosaur thing. Like, another thing, random thought. I would love to have seen the meeting where they convinced Miyamoto to put in the Super Mario Brothers Super Show theme, because I would think he views that as awful and bad. and to actually convince him to put in the a cartoon he and Nintendo prefers to act like never, ever happened, I wonder how that meeting
went. What do you think was more likely, like, in a vacuum? I would have thought it would have been slightly more likely that there would have been a background Easter egg for like Scapelli plumbing from the 93 movie than anything from the Super Show, personally. Does anyone else like align with that?
Yeah, I guess that shows they hate the 93 movie more than Super Show.
I don't even know if they hate Super Show. I feel like they are just not aware of it. But I'm sure like it helped them sell a lot of games. It gave kids a chance to look at Mario every day on TV for years. And I'm sure like, well, that did well for us, but we're not going to respect the choices it made or like any of the lore it invented. But it was like, it was good marketing, you know, ultimately. The Mario movie from 93 was not good marketing for them. That tarnished the brand.
Even
though I prefer it.
When it comes to convincing Miyamoto to allow that, like, maybe in 10 years' time there'll be like a documentary where it's him speaking in Japanese and the subtitles are just, they drove a dump truck full of money over to my house. Or something. I mean, that
wasn't made of stone.
Yeah. It's like, I don't know. I mean, this whole thing of like, you've got Miyamoto there promoting it because, you know, he's the face of like Super Mario, more or less. But like, I don't know really what influence he would have actually had on the product, really.
You know, I got to counter that, Stuart. I think Miyamoto's gone Hollywood. Like,
he's sold out. What's he
I'm
made
saying
lately?
In the last 5 years, I'm saying ever since this got announced, you don't see name me a direct where Miyamoto spoke in context about a video game. He only appears in them to talk about this movie. He is always saying, like, me and Chris-san are working so hard on this. And he has been talking about this movie exclusively in directs for so long. He is very invested. Wow. I noted this in the theater when the first credits on the screen, like, presented by, it was Shigeru Miyamoto and then Chris Meledandri, the head of Illumination. Miyamoto went over him in the credits. Mm. Like, his name was first. Like, so, yeah, I think he really wanted to be involved in this movie.
I wonder, though, if it's a case of him being involved or that being part of the marketing to win your trust.
Mm, yeah, okay.
Where it's like, well, we were so hands-off with that first movie that they were just doing whatever they wanted and we don't like what they delivered, but we're going to make sure you know Miyamoto is best friends with Chris-san. And they hang out and they go to his weird church together and they're best friends.
I think the media should give Shigeru a harder time about this. They should be like, okay, so you invented Zelda and Mario and what else did you invent? Other stuff. What have you invented lately, Shigeru Miyamoto? And it's like, oh, Pikmin what? 4? Is it, you know, good lord. I think that the people should start turning on him, quite frankly. We should have the anti... we should go hard on Shigsy. Let's go. Come on. Let's have some...
I think Miyamoto...
I just think it would be funny because he's obviously one of the greatest people in the history of the industry. If inexplicably there was this ridiculous wave of negativity towards him,
I want to see his ruin.
I want to spearhead that negativity.
I want the rise of Tezuka.
Yeah, I think Miyamoto was really full of himself from doing like Jimmy Fallon and all that, and like, wow, they really like me. Like, I want to be around all these famous people. Like, you look up the photos from the premiere night. Like, he's taking photos with all the movie stars. Like, I think he was very excited to be there. But yeah, it's also funny. We've talked about all this stuff, but we have not mentioned the directors of this at all. Who I had to like look up, like Aaron Horvath and Michael Jelinek, or Jelinek. I'm saying it like
Jelinek.
He's the character of Stranger with Candy. But they were the directors of the Teen Titans Go to the Movies movie, which actually I think was good.
Yeah, it was pretty. It was all right. It was entertaining. Yeah, I mean, it was a fine Teen Titans Go episode, I suppose.
And that was full of like actual inventive stuff. I was like, oh, that's surprising. They got away with that kind of thing. I got to think they were hogtied by everything, all of the rules in this movie compared to Teen Titans Go, which is crazy because Teen Titans Go is also part of a giant media monolith and companies full of rules about what you're allowed to do with DC characters. You would think they're pretty used to it. And also in the special thanks was Alex Hirsch. Which I was like, wait, the creator of Gravity Falls. Yeah. And I remembered, briefly he was hired to write it. And I have a feeling all the rules, like, is why you like, ping, just pinged right off of it. Like, oh, this sucks.
Could have been better.
Yeah.
Can I talk about someone who's not in the credits?
Please.
Grant Kirkhope, the writer of the DK rap, is not credited for the DK rap. It's just like DK rap from Donkey Kong Country or whatever. It's like, wow.
I think, personally, I would not want to be credited for creating the DK rap, but that's just me.
Well, I think he wants some money from being in
that movie. Come on, I kid. I love Grant Kirkhope. Come on. Yeah.
Please.
He's the voice of... upset there were no...
Getting your name in the credits of a billion-dollar movie is a pretty big deal, dog.
I just wanted them to have the Donkey Kong rap lyrics, but I felt like they were just ashamed of that part of it. It's like, all right... And I hope no one thinks this is like an obscure reference. I just wonder what people think, because it's like when I see these references, and I'm sure people are thinking, oh, I can't believe they put that in there. But then you look, it's like, well, that game sold 18 million copies. Like, again, Mario is like mass market video games. I was not surprised to see the DK rap. It was like cute to see it pop up in like Smash Brothers Melee in like 2001. Like, oh, wow, they put this in here. But then like, oh, it's like, well, everyone has played this as a kid and everyone's nostalgic for it. So I'm not that surprised anymore.
Well,
really.
Its inclusion in Smash was how I know about it to begin with, because I did not have any Nintendo systems until the N64. So...
I loved its inclusion in Smash because I thought it was like, oh, everybody made fun of it in 64. Nintendo will never recognize it again. And then when it was in Smash, I was like, oh, hey, they're in on the joke, or they think this is fun. That's
and I would
good.
Put that on to troll people as the background music.
Yeah. honestly, though, with the obviously it really sucks that these original composers didn't get credits in the movie that use their fucking songs. That's the sad It's a sad fact about like game composition for making music for video games, unfortunately. But also, I'm so used to it with like as a Marvel dork. I know, like, the dudes rarely ever get any, like, all the original creators rarely ever get any credit except in a giant wall of special thanks at the end that's just for me to read and say, like, oh, they did credit Jerry Conway. That's nice, at least in this special thanks thing.
Yeah, I want to clarify, like, obviously it is BS that he wasn't credited. I want to make that clear. That's my actual opinion, okay? They should have been credited, obviously.
Yeah, and I think that, like, not all the Mario music they used was just Koji Kondo, because from Mario Sunshine on, he had people that were helping him, and I think some of the compositions were not just him, but I don't know what the legal rules are, maybe because he was, like, the head composer or was the head of the sound team, it's just him, but I feel like more people could have been credited for the music, for sure.
Could they have found it in their hearts to credit Tommy Tallarico for anything, please?
Yeah. Now, is Koji Kondo still a big dog at the Mario factory, so mm-hmm. that's also why he can get the credit. I mean, and he deserves it. He deserves all that respect.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's also Chaim Saban and Shuki Levy get credit in it because their song they wrote for a TV show which had ASCAP laws, and they would actually, and also they should rightly be terrified that Chaim Saban would sue the shit out of him if he used that song without paying.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Something that made me laugh was it's a sort of an audience reaction when the movie starts and you first hear the Mario music. Someone in the audience went like, oh, the music. And I was just, it reminded me of something, which is when the Sonic movie came out and someone mentioned the Tails ending and someone was like, oh, spoilers. And I'm like, it's Tails. Like, how is it a spoiler to say Tails is in a Sonic movie? It's absurd. It's crazy.
Yeah, like, of course they're going to have have the music in the movie, in the Mario movie. So, like, we're running out of time here. I do want everyone to give their final thoughts.
This is longer
than
the movie,
first, because
sorry, go on.
We're reaching the actual Mario movie length. This is not a commentary, by the way. I will say, I've said my piece. I went in optimistically. I went in not wanting to hate it. I went in, again, being indoctrinated to love Mario since basically my brain had started forming. Did not like it. So many missed opportunities. I don't like the Italian erasure. There are no accents. And these guys never talk about Italian food ever, and Mario doesn't even want to eat the pasta. And I feel like that is essential to who they are. They jumped off a pizza box to entertain you, and they just, everything in this movie just got hit with like the blandification ray. And I feel like the games have way more character than this movie. Like, I love what I see in playing the games, and that is not on the screen, and that's what I wanted. And those are my final thoughts. Jess, how about you? Final thoughts about this movie?
You basically said exactly, like, verbatim what I wanted to say. Blandification.
I apologize.
Blandification, Ray, is 100% exactly the words I would have used if I had the exact same brain as you. But yeah, it's just, it doesn't need to be this way. Like, kids' movies are good. They can be amazing. Like, if you want a good Mario CG movie, watch Wreck-It Ralph. Like, that's better than this by leagues. And it's like, just because it's a kids movie doesn't mean that we aren't allowed to criticize it as adult film goers or anything like that. Like, kids deserve good movies too. Like, this is just a big nothing burger. Like, who cares about this? It's just toys clashing against each other until it stops eventually.
Stuart, how about you? Final thoughts on the Mario movie?
You've said it all, both of you. It's not. It's just a poor film. Like, it's a disappointing, poor, lame, lazy-feeling film. I'm sure they worked very hard on it, but you know what I mean. It's like, every aspect could have been more interesting. And the Mario, when you think of Mario and you think, oh, how could you even make a good movie out of that? Because, I mean, let's face it, it's just an abstract series of obstacle courses, basically, in that core. But then you have the Mario RPGs, and why didn't they lean into that? Like, you don't need to introduce Mario. Everyone knows that he's just Mario, you know? He doesn't even need to speak. You can have him there, and you have this compelling world around him full of strange creatures, strange monsters. And Bowser can be the one who drives the narrative because he speaks, you know? That all you need to do is something like that, something weird like that, and it's still Mario, and it will still charm people, and you just don't need... You can even have Chris Pratt. It doesn't matter. You just need to make something that's actually charming rather than just, like, here's some of the iconography from Mario. We've pasted it onto this shitty Despicable Me 4 or whatever. Whatever, who cares? Get the movie out, rake it in, make the second movie. Like, it just feels total production line bullshit to me, and it could have been so much more fun than this.
Agreed. And Henry, how about you? Final
okay. yes. In my glass half full way of thinking about this, I think this could have been much worse. I think it could have looked uglier. I think they could have had even more lazy jokes. I think there could have been more shitty needle drops. Like, there, I had lowered expectations for it, and I at least like it. It's got good animation. Some of the action's good, but yes, I was like, man, 30 years, you couldn't think of a better plot than just the first movie. And I also think, like, you're not going to get a Paper Mario or an the meta stuff of a Mario RPG. Also because, like, Miyamoto, I don't think particularly cares for those games. Or they're not really his thing.
Yeah, he doesn't.
And he doesn't want to do it. I would love someday, let's say these get so big that they make a series of Mario movies. And then eventually they're like, hey, you know, there was that Lego movie that animates the Legos like they move, like how Legos actually move. Let's do a Paper Mario movie. And we animated in that, like, you know, they do something exciting with it. Mm-hmm. It's crazy in a post Spider-Verse world that nobody's exciting. They're not really experimenting all that much. But and the last thing I wanted to say was,
oh, right, there's a special surprise.
I was saving this unboxing here. Uh-oh. For my Xfinity rewards.
I forgot here. About it. What did you do to earn that, Henry?
I'm part of the Monopoly of Xfinity subscribers. So you get a free Super Mario Brothers movie gift box here with it. And
oh my god, it's a bomb.
So it comes with a microwavable and Xfinity branded popcorn.
Ugh.
It's got to be full of carcinogens.
And a little Mario folder here with Bowser on the front,
not even big enough for a sheet of loose leaf paper.
A box of Sour Patch Kids.
I'll take those.
What is happening?
Ooh,
right,
some
now
crayons. Some crayons for my Mario movie activity book.
Oh, wow.
How many
wow
illustrations? Can you go through real quick? I want to see it on the webcam.
Okay.
I wish I could do activities. I'm jealous.
I want to see if these are like screenshots that they like desaturated.
Oh,
and
man. Okay,
over.
So you got like a puzzle here, or you got like
a
little maze
to
run in there. And you
this is awful. This is a bad
I'll
gift
have the
box,
Bowser shake.
Sorry.
I'll have the Bowser shake.
Yeah, it's
it looks like a menu for like Denny's.
Shoots and ladders type game here. So actually, you know, they gave me the crayons. You don't even really like rearrange the ladder game. Look at that. Oh, so God. Yes, that. Thank you, Xfinity Rewards.
Boy, how
for
insulting.
Monopolizing my area here.
Wow, how can I get one of those?
Well, you have to live in America and have to be forced to subscribe to Xfinity for cable because they're the only game in town.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And you get a free pack of crayons every decade.
Yes, yeah.
So, yeah, I'll close by saying no matter what we say, this movie will make $1 billion, and I will just be a pathetic millionaire podcaster. So, in the end, who's the real loser here? It's me. It's a me. There, like, I forgot he talked like that. It's been so long.
Oh.
But yes, thanks for listening, folks. This has been Retronauts. You can find us on Twitter at Retronauts, but of course we are supported by all you great fans out there at patreon.com/retronauts. Sign up for $3 a month there. You can access all these podcasts 1 week at a time and ad free. But for $5 a month, that's where you want to be, because for $5 a month, the cost of, I don't know, a third of a ticket to this movie, you can get access to 2 full-length bonus podcasts every month, all the other podcasts 1 week ahead of time, and also a weekly column and a weekly podcast by Diamond Fight. There's so much waiting for you there. We began this new initiative in the beginning of 2020, so there's now like 3 complete years of podcasts that you haven't heard waiting for you behind that $5 level at patreon.com/retronauts. And let's go around the virtual room here. Let's start with Jess. Jess, where can we find you? What are you up to lately?
Hi, I'm Jess O'Brien, formerly of Giant Bomb video producer. Currently just being an unemployed fucking loser, but kind of liking it. You know, streaming on Twitch. I'm Voidburger on Twitch. I'm Voidburger on YouTube, Twitter, all those places. I'm Voidburger Gaming if you want to see my stream VODs. And just dabbling in stuff, little projects here and there. It's nice.
Thank you. And Stuart, how about you?
Oh, hello. You can find me on Twitter at Chupacabra with all my terrible opinions that I spew out at rates of ridiculous amounts per day instead of doing any work. You can read my book, All Games Are Good, when it comes out from Press Run this summer, I believe. I don't know the exact date, but as soon as I do, believe me, I will be plugging it relentlessly and be unfollowed by everyone, including in real life. And also, you can listen to me on Retronauts because I do present episodes here as well. and write things on the Retronauts website. For example, I'm currently reviewing every single GameGear game, which I now fully regret beginning to do because they're not very good. Thank you.
And Henry, I know we talk a lot about good animated movies in the past 3 or 4 months, like Chicken Run and Paranorman and Hollywood Godfathers. Excellent movies with great screenplays. Where do we do that?
That's at patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons. It's part of the Talking Simpsons network of podcasts that me and Bob do. Yeah, we. If you liked all our cartoon opinions here, we do that every week, multiple times a week. We have the Talking Simpsons podcast where we go through every episode of The Simpsons in chronological order. We're deep into season 13 and 3 right now, about to get into seasons 4 and 14. And there's our What a Cartoon podcast where we cover a ton of side stuff in or a ton of non-Simpsons cartoons. And yes, our animated movies thing, we talk, if you want to hear this to 6 hours long, then you need to sign up at patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons. Our Chicken Run one was really great. Also, the Batman, Superman, World's Finest. We had a whole bunch of fun with that. And even Disney's Dumbo or other anime films like Kiki's Delivery Service or Akira. There's lots of cool stuff there. We haven't covered we haven't covered a video game movie yet, a video game inspired movie. But I'm sure that day will come, but yes. Or an Illumination movie, and I guess we're going to have to someday.
Eventually.
But yes. So that's at TalkSimpsonsPod on Twitter, patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons for all of our bonus content. And check out Talking Simpsons wherever you listen to podcasts. And I'm HENEREYG on Twitter.
Thanks so much for listening, folks. We'll see you again next week. But for now, the balcony is closed.